Mulibwanji. Welcome back to the Be Official Podcast. I'm your host, your guy, Paul Payne 837, and I'm joined with my nigga, Director D in the building. Today's so special because we are having the uncut conversations. And today's topic is rather very intriguing, you know. This is something you're going to love, and we're tackling toxic relationships. Without further ado, let's roll into the intro. Director D,
yes.
What role does childhood upbringing play in influencing adult behavior, particularly in the context of unhealthy relationships?
Childhood behavior, upbringing, unhealthy relationships. Those are the key factors or key points that I think play a very pivot role in to every person as an adult. So I think most of us neglect to peruse through our past childhood traumas as we move in our adult relationships. We don't get to question why we behave a certain way because we don't think that our upbringing played a very pivotal role in that. That's why you find today that there's a quote that I like. It says, I have met a man who is 20 and I've met a boy who is 40.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very deep sentiment in there, because what that entails is that you can be 20 or 25 and be mature enough to make life decisions or go through life than somebody that's 40 that still is behaving like a child. So that tells you the context of how those two were, you know, raised and what life taught them. So there's some people that have gone through life and have learned certain things quickly than others. But key behavior, number one, I think I would say great research has shown that from the age of, I think, 0 to 3, it's a very critical stage in a child's life that I think most parents neglect, because in that stage, when we are growing as children, we learn cognitive behavior whereby that's when you're learning to speak, you're going through all of that, but most of what we learn is through what we see. So children at that age, they learn by what they see. So that means whatever is going on around the house, that's what the child sees. That's why you find in that stage, children mimic what their parents do. I think I laugh because in Africa, we've tend to think at that age, the baby cannot speak, like, let's say, for example, like full words. That's why you find most of the times when they're trying to speak to the baby, they speak their words in half sentences. So let's say, for example, you want the baby to say mommy, they say mama. You want the baby to say daddy, you say dada. But then that's why you find the babies repeat that, because that's what they think they know, because that's what you say. But you find most of our friends, mostly white people, they speak to their children in full sentences. That's why you find by the time the kid is like 4 years, they're able to have a very normal conversation with full words. But then, as we don't think at that time, the baby has grown enough to, you know, speak certain ways. So but in the age of 0 to 3, it's very vital that we understand the environment of which the child is raised in. Coming to my other point, which is the fact of how nurturing the environment is, I think what you'll find is that most of our African setups where we've been raised in, I think you would understand, say, if I were to ask any of you guys to say, how many of you grew up in a home where you saw your parents kissing in just, you know, in a normal manner to show love and affection and whatnot, you know what I mean? Or when was the last time you saw your parents hugging, you know what I mean? So we grew up, you know, in environments where if you would see your parents hugging, you know, once a while, you know, it wasn't like an everyday thing, you know what I mean? But imagine, you know, growing up in an environment, not that there was no love in the household, but then there are just those gestures that kind of reflect affection that we didn't grow up seeing to a point. That's why you find other people have, when they're adults, they don't know how to show affection because growing up, they never saw affection like that. That's why you find by the time they get to meet somebody that's grew up in a different environment where they are able to be nurtured, shown affection in that kind of way, and then they meet somebody that grew up in a different setup where they had not seen affection being shown like that, it becomes strange to them because I've never experienced that. The other thing I can say is witnessing, you know, dysfunction in the family, abuse, all of that can tend to manifest as we grow as adults and tend to affect how we relate in terms of our relationships. For example, if you grew up in a broken home, I think trying to see love in a different light kind of takes a lot of self-work, self-care, therapy to get to a place where you get to see love in a different light. That's how you find most times, I think, as we jump into these relationships, we don't question the important things like how was your upbringing like, because you find most of us tend to behave a certain way without recognizing why we behave like that. So it takes a lot of emotional intelligence to get to a place where you are able to self-reflect and ask yourself why you behave a certain way. So even for the other person, it takes patience to understand the other person as well, because we've all grown in different setups, different environments, experienced different childhoods. So I think even as we tend to jump into these relationships that we do, I think one of the important things that every individual should consider is emotional intelligence, which requires you to do a lot of, you know, self-work and also exercise empathy for the other person, you know, because it takes a lot to love or care for a partner that was raised different than you. So which takes emotional intelligence to realize that we have not been raised the same, we've been raised different. But then to be able to come together and show love and nurture each other, that takes a lot of emotional intelligence. So I think it's important to recognize how pivot our childhood upbringings are in how we turn out in our adulthood and how we relate to other people, not only in relationships as friends, but also in relationships as partners with our loved ones. So all of that tends to show how unhealthy some of our upbringings are. But then it's a choice to want to learn and be better, to tend the unhealthy habits that we experience, the traumas, the dysfunctionality, the neglect, which in turn leads most of us to have, you know, low self-esteem, anxiety issues, lack of confidence, you know, all of those I can mention a lot. But then, so understanding that our childhood upbringing was important for us to, you know, reflect on how we behave and see how unhealthy some of the patterns were and how we fix them now as adults. Because you can't grow up, you can't go through life, you know, keep a pattern of behavior that you know is not healthy, not only for you, but also to people around you. So I think I would highlight these things that I have. So, Mr. Superstar,
yes, sir.
How do experiences of deprivation and abuse during childhood impact one's ability to recognize and leave toxic relationships as an adult?
That's a very good question. And I think I'll put like two or three case scenarios. And since we're talking about childhood, meaning we are going back to the root, right? And this is where everything happens. If the roots are rotten, meaning the tree won't grow healthy, you know? So I'll talk about three case scenarios, right? Imagine a child who was wrongly touched by his or her relatives or neighbors. In such a case, it's very hard, especially, you know, we have all heard stories and watched movies where a child has been abused by the relatives, or a child has been abused by the neighbors, by, in fact, the people who are even close to the child, you know. It might, some even worst case scenarios where even the parents are the ones who are doing that, you know. And when the child comes out and tells somebody who's close to them, it's always like, hush, don't tell anybody. That's always how you say, you know. And imagine growing up in such an environment. That child is deprived of the state to be in a place where they can stand up for themselves or speak against ill malices that go around them. So when that child grows up, right, and they are found in a place where it's a very toxic relationship, it's very hard for them to even say a word, because in as much as that place might be toxic, it's hard for them to even seek comfort from outside, because at an early childhood, they were taught not to be in a place where they are seeking for advice or seeking for help. You know, they were taught to always bottle it in, you know, shut up, silence, you know. So it would be hard for them to even notice that, like, to them it would be just normal, because that's what they have been taught in their early stages of life. So they're deprived of the essence of being in a place where they are enlightened to speak about all these issues. So whenever they're asked how their relationship is, okay, it's fine. He's a good man. She's a good woman, you know, because they don't want to lose that affection that they have in that moment, right? Because that's the only thing they know. Another case scenario I'll give is a child who saw his or her parents involved in domestic violence. Oh man, this one is rather deep, because this is something that I've also experienced and I've seen, you know. So being in a place where you witness your parents always fighting, to you, in that moment, it will look like, okay, this is normal, you know. So even when you grow up, right, I'll give a case scenario of a woman. If a woman is always in a place where she sees that the parents used to fight, right, and she's found in a place where now she's with somebody who's violent, it will be hard for her to even recognize when there's peace, because to her, it's like domestic violence, that's love. So if she's not being hit, she'll sit and wonder, wait, this man hasn't hit me. Is the love still there? You know? So it's like already at the child stage, you have been programmed that violence for you is love. But hence, that's toxicity. That's a disease, you know, that has eaten up your childhood fears, hence destroying your adulthood, you know. So these are things that deprive everything from the angle of seeing things as they are. If it's red, it's red. If it's green, it's green. You know, you start questioning things like, is that red? Is that green? But yes, you're seeing that's the color, you know. So domestic violence also adds up to a child being in a place where they see domestic violence being love, you know. And the last case scenario I'll put is a child who was never taught to stand up for him or herself. This is one of the worst, because it's one of also the worst scenarios, because if growing up you were always in a place where you were never tutored to be taking a stand for the things that you know, like, this is wrong, you know, I shouldn't be in such a phase, right? So if your parents were never taught you that, it's hard for you to be in a place where if you're facing all these toxic people, like, you can't stand up to yourself because it's okay, it's normal. So you are always scared and feeling some type of way, like, if I stand up to this person, they might leave, you know, and I'll remain alone. I think that's one of the worst things that people in toxic relationships rather choose to be with, that a predator, you know. So, yeah. Director D,
yes.
Can you explain the psychological dynamics that lead individuals to stay in abusive relationships despite knowing they are harmful?
I think if I had the chance, I think I would want to be a therapist. That means I would have to study psychology, because the human mind always intrigues me, and how we behave, you know, our behavior pattern, because that buffers my mind to know, like, why do people behave a certain way, even when they know, like, I'm supposed to do this? Because even I myself still fight with that till today, whereby, you know, you know what you're supposed to do, but you don't do it, and then tell yourself you're going to do it. You know, that kind of thinking is what gets me, you know, intrigued. But coming to your question, I think the first thing I would address is what psychologists call trauma bonding. So trauma bonding is where two people get to bond over a familiarity of traumas that they've both experienced. Why trauma bonding? I think many other times we don't question why we jump into relationships. For example, before you get to date whoever you want to date, I think, first of all, find the time to self-date yourself. Know that you're fully in a place where you understand yourself. You know that you're not in a place where you're just looking for a void for somebody to fill, because that's what most of us do. We date because you feel lonely, you're in a phase of loneliness, and then you want to just jump into a relationship. Which in turn, realizing that when you get to a place where you're no longer lonely, and then you realize that the person that you're with is not the person you wanted to be with. But then, because you're in a lonely phase, you get to do that. But then, so it's asking yourself, why am I jumping into this relationship? So, because many other times when you're in your trauma phase, we oftenly relate to familiarity. So if you come from a broken family, it means you don't understand fully what love, affection looks like. So you tend to draw yourself to something that's similar. So you find somebody else that's going through the same thing. That's why you find often at the times that when we heal, we find it hard to be with the people that we chose, because we are in different spaces then. So that's what they call trauma bonding. The other thing is low self-esteem. I think we need to find the confidence to love ourselves, because I think self-love is important. So dating from a place of low self-esteem will tend to leave you in a place where the other person keeps talking down on you, and then you feel like you're not good enough, because often at the times, I think you've seen in relationships where the other person continues to make the other person not feel enough, you know. They keep pointing out your flaws despite knowing that nobody's perfect. And we are all on a journey of, you know, self-care, self-development. But then the one thing they keep doing is constantly pointing to your flaws, which leads to, you know, self-esteem, which I'll pinpoint to the first question where if you, let's say, for example, most people that suffer low self-esteem are people that were not shown love when they were children. So you find mostly parents isolated them. So they feel they need to be drawn to somebody that shows them a little love. So which gets them stuck in that place. So the other thing I'll talk about is, you know, isolation. This kind of behavior pattern is where mostly one of the individuals tends to isolate the partner from those they care about to a point that they get you to a place where if there's something wrong with you, you have no community that you can talk to or address to. That's why you find, mostly you find women that they're dating a partner that their boyfriend does not want them to talk to their friends, you know, because they know that once something is wrong and then she gets to a community, then it's all downhill from there. So they tend to isolate them from their friends, family, relatives and whatnot, to a point where now they're just isolated. It's us, the two of you, of which a normal love dynamic is not supposed to be like that. You know, you tend to feel more like of a victim in the relationship instead of, you know, a community of, you know, love, trust and togetherness. I think the other thing I would address is fear, where love is kind. I think we get that from the Bible. Love is kind, gentle, loving, all of those things. One thing that the Bible does not highlight is love being fear, you know. But then when you are in a place of where you fear your partner more than you love them, that should already tell you that something is wrong, you know. You're scared when they come home. You're scared if you speak your mind, then something will go wrong. So many of the times we tend to be victims in these relationships that we jump into, that of which we are not paying attention to all of these psychological behavior patterns. So please take time and, you know, learn all of this. The other one is gaslighting. I think where they tend to, you know, gaslight everything that you say, twist it to their own advantage, always, you know, making themselves as a victim. I think that's why I always say a conversation of you speaking to your partner about how you feel should not turn into an argument, you know what I mean? Whereby you're telling them how you feel, and then all of a sudden it's turned into an argument. So how does a conversation of me expressing what I think turn into us arguing, you know? So they always tend to gaslight everything. And lastly, I'll talk about financial dependency, where it's funny how society today is saddening me, because it's like the one who makes the most money in the relationships has the control, you know? That's why you see that it's sad that today ladies are throwing away love over money, which is not supposed to be the case. It's just supposed to, you have to find the thin lining to find the balance between the two, where I think, again, comes back to emotional intelligence, knowing that despite this person does not make as much as I do, but that does not give me the power to treat them however I want. So it's sad that today you see young ladies being treated harshly, all because the mandem makes more money, and then they think they can throw them left, right and center. So it's the ladies finding their self-worth, realizing that I deserve better. It also goes both ways, because I've also seen where guys are being treated harshly. So it's a thing that goes both ways. So understanding all of these psychological patterns that I think I've highlighted is very keen important to notice. Yeah. Cool.
Yes.
I got another question for you.
All right.
It reads, what are some common misconceptions or rationalizations that people in toxic relationships use to justify staying?
Some misconceptions, right? Let's say the from the case scenarios I said, right? Imagine a child who has been deprived of love, right? Even a slight touch of compassion and love will melt his or her heart because they've been deprived of that love from their childhood, right? So in this case scenario, it's like, since at an early age, this person was deprived of the love from the people around them. So any person who shows just a little bit of compassion, that is something that will overtake them. And to them, that's love, you know, and they'll be in a place where they're like, I can't move because this is the only person who has loved me for who I am. No, it's because you don't know what real love feels like. So for you in that moment, it's like, this is love. And whatever that person is going to do to you, it's like they can get away with anything. Because to you, that's the only love that you have seen. So a slight bit of love and compassion to you will feel like a fresh of breath air, a fresh of new air, you know, because this is something that you have never seen before. And you'll find they are prone to sit and be in a place where like, I can't leave. He or she knows me well, you know. And imagine the child who has been, who has grown up in a deprived state of childhood, while they're seeing domestic violence, right? It still stands to be the same, because no matter how much they're beaten in a relationship, and this is one thing that just baffles each and every person, right? Even myself, because you find they're beaten, treated harshly and badly, and they'll even come to complain to you, you know, like complain so badly. And then in that moment, you give your best advice. You'll be on your Miles Monroe states, go so deep. And just in a few days, they are back with the same perpetrator, you know? So until you recognize the root cause of what your problem is, that's the only way you're going to tackle what your adulthood is bringing up to you. Because those things are things that have deprived you of you seeing clearly into what is truly yours and what is truly meant to be, you know? So you'd find other people, they don't want to be in a state where they don't want to be single. Because, again, it's like they can't live with themselves. Looking yourself in the mirror feels so heavy because you know that you're guilty and you know that I really need to love me. A lot of people in these relationships don't love themselves. That's why you are finding they settle for anything that comes their way, because they can't live with the fact of, like, if somebody doesn't show them love, then for them, they feel like the world has ended, you know? I was once in that place where I felt like you'll never find anybody, you know, who's going to love you for who you are. But I had to conquer the root cause of now going back to my origin, you know, of now, like, I need to love myself. I need to be in a place where I show myself compassion, I show myself love, I show myself all those things that I want to get, you know. I was watching Will Smith. He said something very nice that I found intriguing. He said, happiness is not with your family. Happiness is not with your children, your wife. Happiness is with you. It starts here, it goes here, you know. So no person can give you the happiness that you need. Only you. Only you can give yourself that happiness. So, yeah. Director D.
Yeah.
How can individuals break free from the cycle of abuse and reclaim their sense of self-worth and empowerment?
I think it's very cardinal for us to recognize that the process of, you know, recovery takes courage, time, and above all support. So I think the first step to take to that would be, you know, recognizing the abuse, because first of all, you need to acknowledge and accept what is true, because that's when healing starts. So accepting and recognizing the abuse, because often other times you find that the abusers are very, you know, sweet with words, and they'll always, you know, get you to a place where they make you feel they've changed, and then yet the pattern continues to repeat itself. So recognizing the abuse is very important. Secondly, I think build a support network, find friends, family, you know, somebody that you can actually talk to when, you know, something is wrong. You know, build you a network of people that can help you get out of that situation. As I say, it's often takes courage to do that. So find you a support system, you know, a network of people that can help you get out of that place. Because alone, you definitely cannot do it. The other one, I think I would say seeking professional help. If it's not gotten to a place of, you know, physical abuse, because abuse is not only physical abuse, it's verbal as well. There are times that we are in relationships where people utter words that, you know, can really hurt deep, you know. I think for me, I'm a person that believes that the same mouth that can utter abusive words to me and then can't be the same mouth that turns around and says they love and care for me, you know, I don't believe that, because even in the sense of where I'm angry at my loved one, I think it's understanding that I can release my anger in a way that I know that I can express how I feel without hurting the other person, you know. So understanding that as well is very well in seeking professional help. I think the other one is setting boundaries. I think we're often not clear why with the boundaries, even as we go through these relationships in the jump. I think the foundation is often vague as we do these things. That's why you find as we go further, you tend to see certain things. Then you wonder, like, why did I see this? It's because in the beginning, you didn't set a very good foundation of where you guys are going to build this thing. And then when it turns out to get to a place of abuse, and then you question because you didn't set all of these boundaries to the other person, knowing like, oh, bruh, this does not work for me. This does not work for me, you know. So setting boundaries is one of them. And then practicing self-care is also another one, and safety planning. But I think that self-care and personal development is very important. But in summary, I would say it's not an easy process, but it takes time, courage, and above all, the support of your community. Then you can eventually get through that. Yeah. Mr. 837. What are some warning signs that someone may be in an unhealthy relationship or abusive relationship, and how can they seek help?
Somebody call 911. Charlie's falling, dance floor. No, just call on me, you know, and I'll be there to help you. But oh, okay, so some warning signs that you might see, right? That you're in a toxic relationship. I think the first thing for me is where you're always apologizing even for things that you have not done. You know, I think for me that's one thing, where the other person doesn't recognize that they're wrong. You know, And you know, it's in the minor things that we oversee, just the minor little details. You know, we're always the person who is always on your knees, begging. Yeah, always begging for love. Brother, sister, you don't even sleep. Every time you speak to this person, you don't know what's the next thing they're going to say to you. You're always on your feet. There's no time you have ever experienced real peace. You're always in a place where you're constantly afraid. I mean, is that the way love should be? I don't think so. You know, I don't think so. Love shouldn't feel like it's war. Love shouldn't feel like you're always intimidated. You know, so being stripped away from the power of always seeking validation from this other person is a sign that you gotta bounce. That's a red flag. The other thing is violence. You know, violence. That's what love. I know, you know, there was a couple, and I think these people, I think the young one, the youngings can kind of know them. Chris Sean and Blueface. Those people displayed the amount of toxicity on how a relationship is. But do you know how the most stupid thing, right, is that 80% of the people were loving that. Like, that's how a relationship should be. They could fight on online. They could, today they'll fight, right? Beat each other up to a point whereby somebody bleeds. And tomorrow, 3 days later, you find them, they're together. And imagine a child who's watching that, and they'll be like, that's normal. That's love. I should be hitting my partner. So already, abuse, fighting is a no-go. That's a red flag already. That's a really big red flag. Somebody starts raising. These hands were meant to care for you. These hands were meant to protect you, you know? These hands were meant to give you comfort and for you to confide in. These hands were never meant to be Tyson. Unless if you're Mike Tyson. But even Tyson doesn't. But anyway, it is what it is. So that's a huge red flag. And I think the last part I can put in is where you're always being talked down on. They never want to see you shine. It's like every time you have a brilliant idea, right? They just step on you. You know? So those type of things already shows you that you're in a wrong state, you're in a wrong country, you're in a wrong relationship. So if they're always constantly talking you down, I mean, come on, if he's your man's, right? Your man's needs to give you room to grow. Your man's needs to give you room to fly. You're an angel. Those wings were meant to be soaring so high. You know, you guys are a team. You need to be working together and fighting the world together. Doesn't make sense when they're fighting you. You need to conquer the world together, right? So if always this person is always talking down on you, making you feel like you are so belittled in this world, God loves you. I love you. You mean everything to me, you know. Just like God loves you, I love you so much. So you gotta stand up for yourself. And make sure that you're soaring high. So, and how can you seek help? Look for somebody who you trust. Look for somebody who's probably older. If it's not somebody who you know, because maybe there'll be someone in your age range and all that kind of stuff. So if there isn't such a person, look for somebody who's older. Talk to them. You know, and the other way is just end stuff. Just end stuff and make sure you just, if this person keeps on hunting you down, report them, man. Report them, report them. Because I feel like relationships nowadays are really at a stage where now it's really toxic. People are killing each other, man. People are killing each other. People are really at their throats, you know. So if it's not working, walk away. Depart. Never tell yourself that this person will change. A lion is always a lion, man. So always walk away. Walk away. So yeah. Somebody call 911. Peace out.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Be Official podcast. Just want to say we appreciate the love, the support that you guys have shown to the podcast. So let's meet again Tuesday. The podcast drops every Tuesday morning. So you can subscribe on YouTube at Popane837, TikTok, Be Official podcast, and here on Facebook as well. Facebook, it's Popane 837. So like, comment, share. Let us know, you know, one or two things that you learn by commenting. Give us your thoughts on all of these things that we keep talking about. So see you next week, Tuesday. Peace out.